seen the People versus George Lucas? They love Jar Jar Binks. That's part of the point of the movie.
I've not seen People versus George Lucas.
Oh, it's great. It's really good.
I heard it's good.
It's very good.
I heard it's good. And I don't know. I think I'm at the point in my life where I need to stop getting mad at George Lucas.
Yep.
And I need to forgive him and move on. And I think like we've lingered a little bit too much on this dude's sins. And now the future's bright.
Well, we'll get into reason why I'm perfectly happy leaving him alone now, because a lot of you know the backlash he's got. You know, it's a fan backlash, right? Mm-hmm. For George Lucas. And after the Last Jedi, I have some thoughts on the fans, okay?
Yeah, oh.
Yeah, I have some fucking thoughts on the fucking fans.
I got thoughts too. I got hella thoughts, yo. You know what? Let's just hop right into it. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
This is Movie Hopping. It is December 22nd when you're hearing this, 2017. Christmas is right around the corner. Last minute Christmas shopping. We're squeezing in one more podcast before the holidays.
We're shitting it out.
We're shitting this out, man. I mean, I'm having a lot more free time now for the holidays, so I get to go on the internet more and wax poetic about my stupid thoughts. But we're here talking about what literally everybody on the internet is talking about. We're just adding our voices to the trash heap that is the Reddit sphere, or however people are finding this.
It is a trash heap.
Yes.
It is. Oh. Absolutely.
Some might say a trash compactor. And it deserves to... see what I did there? It deserves to all be crushed into a little cube for easy disposal. It's our review of Star Wars : The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Hall, I'm very excited to talk about this. We have hella thoughts that... Here's the thing. I don't think we're going to argue that much on this show, but that doesn't mean we won't express rage, because I think we are both on the same side of what is a very divisive coin in popular culture this month. And it's one that I am failing to understand, and I'm hoping that you can help illuminate this for me.
I don't understand it at all.
Yeah.
This is one of the strangest. Okay. Critically, it's fine, right? Critically, it's doing fairly well.
Yeah.
But the fans, and, you know, I alluded to this, the fans.
Which, by the way.
Yeah.
We are fans. Are we fans of Star Wars?
Yeah.
You're a fan of Star Wars. Yeah. I'm a fan of Star Wars. So what's this, like, making them the other shit? You know what I mean? Like, they're part. We are them. Just call them a group that we are not a part of would not be fair.
They're either irrational or they're the fans that. Liked Rogue One.
Yeah. What fans liked Rogue One exactly?
A lot.
I didn't meet many of them.
I did.
I mean, I met people that were like, yo, that Darth Vader scene, though, was incredible. Like, I heard that.
I met a lot of people who liked it. And I think this is where we're drawing the line here on these people.
So I have a few theories.
Yeah.
Number one, it's pure trolling.
Mm-hmm.
That's theory number one. Because here's the deal. I'm very skeptical. I don't know, it's like these cinematic metrics are not the most reliable of like, you know, scientific research. You know what I mean? Like, Rotten Tomatoes scores really don't tell you anything. Audience scores don't tell you anything. Fucking cinema scores don't tell you anything either. But each of them sort of paint a different story about this.
Yeah.
Number one, the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is at a modest 55% or whatever it is. It's not like 20% of fans liked it. You know, it's half and half. And oftentimes the loudest voices are the ones that make the biggest impression on people. So their sort of whining and bitching on Rotten Tomatoes is perhaps amplified by the nature of the platform. The cinema score has been a solid A.
Mm-hmm.
When people have left the theater, they have expressed nothing but acclaim for this movie. They were jacked when they came out of it. So I'm starting to think that the voices on the internet that are like, oh, the Force can't do that, are just the ones that like to troll.
Sure.
Maybe I'm wrong.
But Rian Johnson came out and addressed the fan backlash personally.
Yeah. That's a stupid thing to do.
Yes.
Don't address anything.
No, but that to me means that it's much bigger than just Rotten Tomatoes.
No, I don't doubt that there are hordes of people that are going online saying that they hated the movie. Mm-hmm. I'm just a little skeptical of how big that number is and what their true motivations are. Because it's perhaps like, they were a little lukewarm on the movie, sure. Maybe they didn't love it, and they're deciding to be mean because they're trolls.
I didn't see this after The Force Awakens, though, you know?
No, certainly
not. Not at all.
Certainly not.
Which is odd, because I think one is clearly a better movie than the other.
Yeah.
By a long shot.
Yeah. We should so let's, before we get into that, because I do think that there's a fascinating thing going on, and it's a larger conversation that we can sort of have about fandom. What we came here to talk about, though, is the movie. So let's talk about the movie.
Yeah.
We saw this opening night in some capacity. When did you see it? Thursday or whatever it was?
And technically, it was it would have been Saturday. It was the 16th, but it was midnight. You know?
Okay.
So it was, you know, Friday at midnight.
I also saw it Friday at 11:30.
Okay, so like basically at the same time,
yeah.
More or less.
Yeah. I got to be honest with you. I have not been that exhilarated coming out of a movie in a very long time.
Okay.
I just haven't. And this is the attachment that I have, I guess, to Star Wars that I've built now over 22 years on this planet. It's an incredibly personal story to me. It's something that I have followed, and I've had my ups and downs with it, and I've liked Star Wars movies, and I've hated Star Wars movies. But the stuff that this movie is able to do, the places that this movie is able to go, because they've done that work,
mm-hmm.
and because we have grown so attached to these characters and so attached to this universe, is thrilling. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not sure if this was necessarily its own original story, I would have the same reaction. I would probably think this is a pretty good Rian Johnson sci-fi movie. But because of the added weight of this story and this franchise, I can be honest with you, I walked out of that theater in awe. Mm-hmm. I really felt that way. I walked out of there just going, man, fucking Star Wars.
Yeah.
Fucking Star Wars can do that to me in its ninth movie in the franchise. It blows my mind.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I felt the same way.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Pretty much exactly the same way. And it's very weird. On second viewing, it was interesting because I picked up on a lot more things that I didn't necessarily pick up on the first time. And I don't know. I've never been so interested in the characters before,
yeah.
in the way and how complicated they are,
yeah.
and just how wonderfully structured the entire film is, and how it's basically all set up around their development, which is funny because this is more of a character piece than any of the other Star Wars films, in my opinion, because there are entire sections of the film that, you know. We got to get into spoilers, but
no, of course we're full spoilers. And listen, if you haven't seen Star Wars now and you're listening to a podcast about spoilers, get the hell out.
I'm not calling this a character study. I'm not going to be that pretentious asshole.
Sure.
But it dips its toes in that, in the sense that it is very character focused. And generally, when movies tend to be solely about these people, they tend to be more plotless.
Mm-hmm.
It has a tendency to happen. And to me, there are whole sections of this movie that are very plotless, where they don't necessarily serve much of a purpose other than the thematic implications of what's going on. And they're there.
The casino.
Yes. But they're there specifically to help develop these people and get specific ideas across about the world and these individuals and whatnot. And it was – even the casino, I thought – I was pretty compelled by it all.
We'll talk about the casino in
yeah.
a little bit. I could not agree more. Rian Johnson is perhaps the best director that's ever made a Star Wars movie. I mean, I guess you could say Lucas, at his peak, was a better director, but I don't know. I can't say that definitively.
I guess.
Right? I mean, he's certainly better than J.J. Abrams, certainly better than Gareth Edwards.
Best director, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's the best directed.
No, okay, fair enough. But I do think that in terms of their body of work till this point, I would say Rian Johnson. And I felt this way beforehand. Like, I was juiced to see Rian Johnson's version of Star Wars.
Yes.
Like, this is a dude that understands wonder and awe, is inventive with science fiction premises. Looper is one of my favorite movies of the 21st century. I think Looper is brilliant. And again, has such a keen eye for character and is able to take these premises and put them in these very interesting sort of moral conundrums. He's able to take it to the extreme of, like, if we invented, so for in the instance of Looper, if we invented invented time travel in this science fiction universe, where's it gonna go? Are we gonna go back in time and make $1 million betting on horse racing? Are we gonna go back in time to kill Hitler? No, the mafia is going to have the ability to make people sleep with the fishes, essentially, through time travel. And that's a really, it puts these characters in really interesting moral dilemmas. He kind of does the exact same thing here in a construct that has now been well established for 40 years. Mm-hmm. It's the idea of it's a Star War. It's the Jedi. It's the Sith. They are the Knights of the Round Table. They have silly sword fights and they shoot laser beams at each other and they can make rocks float. How can we take this on the surface fairly silly construct and bring it to its moral extreme and really say something about people? And I have never felt more stimulated intellectually by the moral stakes of a Star Wars movie than in this movie.
Yes, you know what I mean? Absolutely. And I love how you said that. The stakes.
Yeah.
Stakes.
Yes.
In a movie.
God forbid.
Wow. That's great. Look, you know, take note, Disney, and apply to your fucking Marvel movies.
I know.
For Christ's sake.
Like, not every movie is meant to be a Disney World ride.
Let your people die.
Yes.
As Kylo Ren says, let them die.
Yes. No, but it's not just let them die because we want a high body count. It's let them die so we can care about what their actions are going forward, so we can care about what happens to them.
Yeah.
We can feel this rush of adrenaline when you're in there. You're like, oh my God, is Kylo going to cut Rey's head off right now? Or is Finn literally going to go into that giant laser beam?
Mini Death Star.
Mini Death Star.
Essentially what they say it is.
They did do another Death Star, didn't they?
Not really. They say it's Death Star tech.
Okay.
It's Death Star tech.
They can't escape the Death Star. But is Finn actually going to die right here? Or, you know, what's going on with Leia? She's in the vacuum of space. That's why you need stakes. You need to feel like they're fighting for something.
And that they're people.
Yes.
They're human beings that can get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That feel like they can go, and we don't want to see them, and that's what's so great about it. It's wonderful. And here's the thing I love about this movie, and why I connected to it so well, is that I'm a big fan of movies that have the balls, or oh my God, I just said balls. I'm sorry, people. The spine. I'm sorry, balls. I can't say that
anymore.
Did
you just assume the movie's gender?
I did. Oh no,
you just assumed episode 8's gender.
I gotta take a drink.
Okay, it's episode Zer. I'm sorry.
It doesn't have to be a specific number.
Okay,
it's infinity. Star Wars Beyond Infinity. Okay. Fuck it. I don't know.
Yeah, it has the spine.
It has the spine. Fuck you. It has the balls.
Uh-huh. It has the vagina. How about that?
Okay.
It has the clitoris. Can we say that?
The ovaries?
That's empowering. It has the ovaries.
It has the ovaries.
Maybe clitoris isn't the best way to say it. It has the ovaries.
It's a stimulating movie. It has the clitoris. Too. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Stop.
Oh, yeah.
Stop your orgasm noise.
Oh, yeah.
Stop! What does it have the balls to do?
Wow, I think I forgot. No, I didn't. No, this movie, like I said, I am a fan of movies that have the balls to say we are going to say things that are going to upset you and characters aren't necessarily going to get what they want and it's maybe not going to be a happy ending because that's the point we're making ultimately. Just because a movie ends the way Seven does, that doesn't – now, not saying Star Wars does end like Seven, but just an example – for Seven ending the way it does.
Wait a minute. First of all.
What?
Episode 7 is a reboot of the original Star Wars movie. Yeah. It just straight up is. And we're not making any ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Yeah.
It's not to say that I didn't enjoy it, but that is a remake. That is a straight up rip-off remake of the original movie that conjures up nostalgia and it's a very fun watch.
It's derivative.
Yes. No question about it.
Yes. But, like I was saying, if a movie ends like Seven, that doesn't mean you have to say, oh, that all was pointless. No. The movie is making a very, very clear point about humanity, and you have to learn from that. And this is why I connected to this movie so much, is because in my life anyway, I have a tendency to learn from my failures more than my mistakes. And that's why I'm more drawn to films that tend to lean towards the idea of having its characters fail. And that's the my favorite theme running through this movie is fucking failure.
Yes.
It's great.
Yes.
And I noticed it even more the second time, especially in the Yoda scene where he makes a very clear point. Like, you know, sometimes being a Jedi, being what we are, is all about failure. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we become who we are. And you have to learn from that, Luke. Learn the fact that you're going to fail and that you can't really stop there.
No, that's how it's
beautiful.
Of course, that's how anything is learned, is through conflict and through failure and yes,
which is
100%.
Which is why the Cantabite sequences are, you know what, many sequences, even some of the plot lines concerning Poe or and a lot of their plans in this movie, actually almost all their plans in this movie, to be perfectly honest. Why, I heard some people complaining about it, how it ultimately leads to nothing and they don't get what they want. But my retort is like, but guys, that's what the movie's
about.
Well,
it's not that they don't get what they want. It's that the audience doesn't get what they want.
Yes.
And what I find so infuriating mm-hmm. about these... I hope it's a small group, but it might not be a small group. What I find so infuriating about these people, I have nothing in common with them, is what you want should be a good movie. It's not... The movie does not owe you anything. The franchise does not owe you anything because you spent 6 hours on Reddit debating what Snoke's true identity was. Mm-hmm. And what I find even more confounding about all of this is, why do you spend all of your time theorizing if you don't ultimately want to be surprised?
Mm-hmm.
What is all of this for? If it's such an easy puzzle to figure out, why even complete the puzzle in the first place? What you want out of any movie that inspires such fan discussion and debate and theorizing and sort of scholarship around it is ultimately you want to be surprised by what you find out. You want things to subvert your expectations, or else we're just summarizing the plot of the first three movies again.
But here's the thing. They don't want their expectations subverted. I want my expectations subverted, but the general audiences don't.
But then why even theorize in the first place? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Like, yes, no, I completely agree.
Why
I have no idea.
Why theorize if ultimately the answer is going to be unsatisfying? There's no answer that they can possibly give you that is going to satisfy every single person's theory.
No.
So this whole thing of like, oh, we've spent so much time wondering about these things and we didn't like the answers, that's really fucking dumb, dude. Like, the movie doesn't owe you the answer that you want. The movie owes you a good viewing experience. The movie owes you a moving story. And that's what this thing is.
Yes.
Let go of it. This is a wonderfully... No, I take that back. This is a phenomenal movie.
Yeah.
This is a really, really great movie in the 8th installment of a fucking franchise. You know how hard that is to get in multi-billion dollar, like, tentpole action movies? Come on, could you imagine if, like, Doctor Strange gave you half the movie that this was? If they did half the character work that Last Jedi did? This is incredible.
Yeah.
Why are you getting so irritated about the smallest of details?
Because they didn't have their expectations met.
But that's... Oh, it's so dumb.
Yes.
What does that even mean, your expectations aren't met?
The expectation
should be, I'm going in to see a good movie. And if you don't want to be surprised, I don't know why you're going to the cinema anymore. Read the synopsis on IMDb, and you're satisfied.
This is what was bothering me, because I was thinking back to it, and I was like, okay, we have the original trilogy, right? And everyone loves it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the prequels, and they do things radically differently, and everyone's like, no, that's strayed too far from what we love. That's too different. Let's go back to what we knew before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get The Force Awakens, and they're like, you know what? It's too similar to the originals, and, you know, we hate it. And then along comes Last Jedi. And yet again, they're like, it's too different. It subverted our expectations
and some
too
psychos
much.
Out there are like, yo, loved the prequels more.
Ugh.
They're like, oh, no. The prequels look like Godfather 2. Get the hell out of here with that shit.
Here's the thing. Even if the prequels followed tonally and spiritually with the original Star Wars movies closer, it still wouldn't make up for the fact that they're not very good movies.
No, they're
That's
not.
That's the problem.
They're not.
There is one movie in that series that I think is good.
You like Revenge of the Sith.
I do like it. And I rewatched it 3 days ago because my younger brother wanted to watch it. And I was like, you know what? I actually do like this movie.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, no. And I also disagree entirely with the sentiment that Last Jedi is not a Star Wars movie and it's not in the spirit of the Star Wars movies. I totally...
Does someone say that?
Oh, plenty of people.
What?
Oh, of course. No, that is part of the complaint. They're like, yo, this is not Star Wars. The prequels are more of Star Wars. And if the prequels are Star Wars, then I don't like Star Wars.
What are you talking
about? As I'm saying, like, It is so in line and so in the spirit of it. I don't know. It is so confusing to me. Part of it feels a little disingenuous. Maybe they are being totally genuine. Because here's the thing. There are multiple people that I have spoken to in real life, that many of which I'm sure are listening to this thing right now, mm-hmm. that are going to think I'm calling them out specifically, and it's not just them. There are many of them. But they have had sort of the same complaints that really felt like they were just looking for a reason to hate on this movie.
Well, that's the – and again, this is the other thing. In today's culture, it's fun – like, and I've said it before. It's fun, sometimes it's just fun to go against the grain.
No question about it.
It just is. And
I love it. No one loves it more than me.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But it's like almost like built into us now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there have just been times where you just want to hate on something.
Yeah.
I've warmed up to Get Out.
Have you?
I don't love it.
Oh, how exciting.
But yeah, I've warmed up to Get Out. I watched on cable the other day. And I was like,
it's infectious, huh?
Yeah, it's fun.
There you go. It's a fun movie. You're back. No, but that.
I'm still nowhere near to be found with Dunkirk, so don't worry, Nico.
Okay, well, they'll get you eventually.
No.
Don't worry.
By the way,
Mark Rylance's boat is eventually going to win you over.
By the way, Nico, I have to confess, I'm there with Dunkirk.
What?
I hate it.
You hate Dunkirk.
I hate it.
It's okay. I hate it. I forgive you for it.
I fucking hate it.
I'll get you back at the end of the year top 10 list. Don't you worry.
I know. It's fine. I expect it.
Yeah, you'll get there. Don't worry about it.
I'll just throw on movies that didn't even come out this year.
Yeah, just to show how much you hate Dunkirk.
So, Mystic River is the best movie of 2017.
Get the hell out of here. Oh, jeez. Yeah, it is... Should we go through the complaints? I mean, let's address the complaints, and then we'll start moving on to what I love about this movie.
Sure.
But here are the ones that I've heard a lot, right? Number one, the Force can't do that shit, right?
Okay.
The Force can't make you fly in space. The Force can't make you project your image into a physical space. The Force can't set up Skype calls.
Why?
Between characters.
Why?
Because evidently we haven't seen that happen before.
And so what?
Thank you.
So what?
I think we've addressed
that. You don't watch that and think like that's right in line with what the Force could be?
Yeah. Of course, no. Yes, you have to buy the logic. I mean, any good science fiction movie, you have to buy into their logic. And I think, I don't know, as this sort of intangible just energy that exists in the universe, yeah. That sure, FaceTime calls is certainly in line. Certainly more in line than the fucking midichlorians were.
Ugh.
Right?
Another thing I love about this movie, how there are like at least five scenes that, for all intents and purposes, say fuck you to midichlorians.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
No, 100%.
I loved it.
You know what I mean? So, incredible. And I'm not the dude that's like, oh, the midichlorians ruined 40 years of cinema.
I won't say they ruined it, but it is a real kick to the face.
No, it's annoying. It's certainly annoying, and it's a bad choice.
Yes.
But I'm not going to like... Yeah. Bemoan an entire film for one small plot choice. And I think here it is even less defensible to do so.
Yes.
I'm just not there at all.
Here's the dirty little secret about human beings, Nico.
What?
I like change. I do. Mm-hmm. I'm not an asshole. Generally speaking, though, here's the funny thing. People don't like change.
No, I know people don't like change.
People don't like change.
But when is this change?
This Star Wars...
This is exciting and different and wonder.
This is different. This is changing it up while still sticking, in my opinion, to what is Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing in its own universe while introducing new ideas and themes and concepts, and it's great. It is changing some of our ideas about what this universe of Star Wars actually is, and I think that's freaking people out. Maybe it's because of the prequels. I don't know. But that certainly seems to be a contributing factor to just the strange backlash.
Right. It is such a strange – it's a backlash I'll never understand. And it's even more weird when you look at the way that critics and audiences have really swapped roles in this whole thing, mm-hmm. of how critics have sort of just been, you know, we're going to go with the flow, you know, just give positive reinforcement to these multi-billion dollar – pieces of IP, and the audience is now in the position of like, oh, I'm gonna sit here and watch Thor Ragnarok again. Ugh. You know what I mean? It's just a weird thing. In terms of the Force, though, I will say people are really mad about that Carrie Fisher scene about how she all of a sudden is a space wizard. Like, That was one of the five most moving images I've seen in cinema this year.
Yeah.
It was a phenomenal moment, and whether or not it's in line with whatever rules you have etched in stone for the Force, like, break those fucking rules. I don't care. If I get a moment like that, break the rules.
And that's the other thing. It is okay to break the rules.
Yes. You have to justify the choice now. You can't just break the rules and not have any reason for breaking the rules.
Yes, because I agree.
Sometimes that gets... All of a sudden, you're in Robert Rodriguez territory, and you're just making just a masturbatory piece of garbage. That can happen every once in a while when people get a little too edgy. But in this case, like, if you break the rules to justify what is an incredibly moving scene for this actress in Carrie Fisher who just passed away last year, like, man, I was tearing up during that thing.
Yeah. I was wondering, I was like, why can't she use the Force? Isn't that what the Force is about? The fact that anyone, if they want to, can reach out with their feelings and access it if they want to?
Yes.
And the fact that she is akin to Luke Sky, or not Luke, Anakin Skywalker.
Yes. It is akin to Luke Skywalker as well. Yeah. And he tells her in episode 6, like, you have that power too.
Yeah.
Like, you can, one day you're going to become one with the Force just like I am.
You have, like, 10 fewer midichlorians than I do, but you're okay. You'll get there. You'll get there.
No, I mean, I don't know, man. So that was complaint number one.
Yeah.
Complaint number two, even more bizarre, too many jokes. Have you heard this one?
Yes!
I've heard this one all over the place.
And I'm like, what? What are you talking about?
Like, did you prefer your jokes when they were Jamaican stereotypes?
Yeah.
Like, that's the comic relief that you prefer?
But here's the thing. I don't think there are too many jokes. I mean, they're there, but, like, as consistently as something like The Force Awakens?
No.
No, not even close.
It's not a comedy. You're not watching a comedy.
Yeah.
Like, and nor would I mind if it was a comedy if it works. But, like, this whole idea of, like, yeah, that movie made me laugh too much, guys. Like, okay. And sex gave you too many orgasms. I mean, I don't know what you're looking for. Laughing is great.
There's a thing in when you're writing or you know, just you know, trying to you know, put a film together. There's this little thing called levity that's always nice to see.
Yes.
And we talk about it a lot.
Sure.
It's why I'm you know, and I'm going back to it again. I'm a broken record, but it's why a lot of The Revenant doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Is because for all of its technical prowess, the entire time you're sitting there, you're just like,
yeah.
That's The Revenant.
Sure. Not a single laugh.
Yes.
That's true. And so one person that I actually talked to made an interesting point, and he was like, I'm okay with there being jokes. I'm not okay with there being Disney-fied jokes. Like, it was the PG-13 comedy that sort of, like, and the one that everybody is pointing to is the prank phone call that Poe does at the beginning of the movie with whatever his name is, with Domhnall Gleeson's character.
Mm-hmm. How do you say his name, by the way?
I say Domhnall, but you say it's Donal, right?
Donal. Donal Gleeson.
Okay. You're Irish now all of a sudden?
I am. Well, I am actually okay. Irish.
Okay. Is he Irish or Scottish?
He's Irish.
Okay, he's Irish.
Donald Gleeson.
Fine. I'll believe you then.
I'm like 68% Irish, so I'm fine, you know.
Okay. That was the one sort of scene that pissed a lot of people off, and I don't know, man. I didn't get that sense. I felt like every laugh was a good one.
I'm not like, now that one, I'm just sort of like, eh, whatever. Like, it was fine, but nothing about it was, it's innocuous. It's like, yeah, it's a joke, and it's timed very well, and it's written very well. I mean, if you want to laugh at it, laugh at it. I found it humorous. It wasn't as funny as Luke's introduction, which is fantastic, by the way.
No, it's great. And that's one of those laughs when he throws that lightsaber.
But it's like a surprise laugh. You're
yes.
Like, what?
That's what exactly like. What I did.
Yeah.
Because it didn't get like a huge thunderous laugh in my theater. It was a lot of like chuckling.
You're like,
oh. Of like, like, should I even be laughing like at this right now?
You can't believe he just did that.
Which is the best laughter. Yes. It's shock. It's surprise.
And it moves you.
Yes, it is great. Moving. It's like, oh my God, I waited 2 years and that was the payoff on it. And many people are pissed off. Like, oh God, why would they do that? And my reaction is, yeah, shock me.
Yes.
I love being surprised.
Surprise, yes.
What's wrong with surprise? We're going to sound like a broken record on this thing, but what's wrong when a movie pulls the rug out from under you.
Has anyone talked shit about the porgs? Because I love the porgs.
No, the porgs are fine.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, no, there is all those creatures are fairly funny. The nuns that cleaned up Luke's island, I found hilarious.
Yes. Oh, I love those guys too.
Those are great. The giant, like,
whale human.
Yes,
things.
Cow beast. That Luke started milking and drinking that, like, green semen from.
That was disgusting.
But a great laugh.
But yeah, I was just like, huh?
I was laughing the whole time.
What is this weird ass shit? It was good though. It's good stuff.
But Star Wars has always been funny. Like, where are you getting this Empire is Schindler's List?
Here's
thing?
The thing. Even Empire Strikes Back is funny. And
of course.
As a matter of fact, I recall Empire being one of the funnier entries. It's simultaneously the darkest and possibly the funniest.
Yes. No, Han is everybody's favorite character. Everybody loves Han so much, but all of a sudden now, God forbid, Poe makes a ding-dong ditch joke or whatever he does.
Maybe it's just the consistency at which they do it, because I will admit some of the jokes are a little more periodical. They're not...
I could see sometimes, and this is a criticism of all Disney movies, that the scripts are a little like... We're going to run it through the corporate machine, mm-hmm. and we're going to insert joke here. Mm-hmm. The idea of, like, punching up scripts now in Hollywood has sort of been taken to an extreme. But I didn't think it crossed that line for me, right? It still felt like an authentic script.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. And there is a voice there, a very clear voice to me.
Sure.
Yeah.
100%.
This was interesting. And visually, it's very interesting because I think this is visually closer to Rogue One, actually, than The Force Awakens. But it has the energy, oddly, of The Force Awakens to
me.
Which is strange. It has that sort of, like, realistic look, that realistic film look that you get from Rogue One. I mean, it's in The Force Awakens, but there's something about that movie that's a little more, like, colorful and vibrant.
Well, yeah, it's the J.J. Abrams lens flare, you know.
Which is nice, I guess.
Yeah, bad robot look.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is cool. You're right, this one was a little more, I don't want to say dull because it was visually striking at times, but you're right, it was gritty in certain areas, but did feel... Very much, yes. The pacing and the tone was very Force Awakens and even more, in my opinion, reminiscent of the original.
Yes.
Than Force Awakens even was.
Yes.
Right.
I completely agree.
I felt the exact sense the entire way, and that's because in props to Disney, I'm becoming very terrified of Disney over the last couple of weeks. I'm sure we all have. The Fox thing freaks me out.
Yeah.
Props to Disney for letting Rian Johnson just create his vision. Mm-hmm. This is a through and through Rian Johnson project.
Oh, yeah.
I saw elements of his have you seen all three of his films?
I have not seen Brothers Bloom.
Okay. Yeah. So I have seen all three. And I see elements of all three very clearly in Force Awakens. It, again, has the, as I mentioned before, plot-wise, is very similar to Looper and where that story goes. It has that same sort of frenetic energy that Brothers Bloom has.
Okay.
Which Brothers Bloom is not a perfect movie. It's a deeply flawed movie. But it moves, and the way that the story's kind of all over the place, and it's really infectious. It's got a really infectious
Well, here's the thing. The story in this is also a little all over the place, but not necessarily in a bad way.
No.
You know what I mean? Certainly
not. It's a tough thing to pull off. Like, he had to juggle, and I'm hearing that criticism too a lot. Like,
it's messy. Right?
It is messy. But the nature of the story, similar to Empire, you know, the fact that we're splitting all of these main characters up and...
The story literally is kind of messy.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Sure. 100%. Yeah. And the decisions that these people make and the situations they find themselves in certainly are. But
Benicio del Toro.
Oh. What's your point?
Thoughts.
We're going right to Benicio?
Yeah, we're going, yeah.
We're going straight there?
Yeah, I don't care. We're jumping around.
We're
just
going
like
straight
movie.
To the dessert?
Yeah.
Okay, we just skipped the whole entree. Okay.
It's a mess here. We're jumping around.
We're going to Benicio.
Yes.
Listen, I love to see Benicio stutter again on screen.
I didn't get why he was stuttering. Why was he stuttering?
Because he's Benicio.
Sure.
No, he made the choice. That was not in the script.
No, it wasn't. I was just kind of okay.
Benicio does that.
I guess.
He's like, I just want to... Dude, like his freaking Usual Suspects character is one of the craziest things ever put to film. That's an insane performance. That's perhaps the most insane performance in the history of cinema. You know? So he'll just do that every once in a while.
It's a great supporting role. That's a good movie. That's a good movie.
I love Usual Suspects.
So do I.
No, I thought he was great in here. And he serves a a very important thematic purpose, which I think we'll get to in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he was great. And as a whole, I thought the entire cast was great.
Yep, I agree. Rose, I liked Rose too.
Who's
a newcomer. Again, that's another thing. Some people are kind of lukewarm on her, where her character ultimately ends up, they just didn't feel it, I guess,
mm-hmm.
with her affection towards Finn and, you know, saving him and telling him that we win by saving, not fighting and mm-hmm. whatnot, and that it's almost like a little love story in a way.
It's a tough story. The Rose and Finn story, and I must admit, I'm not the hugest Finn fan.
Okay.
I'm just not there, and I know some disagree with me, and they are fair to disagree.
I thought they handled his character very well here, though.
Okay. Yeah. Talk to me about the third major complaint that I've heard all over the place, which is...
The Cantabite sequence?
The casino.
The casino, yeah.
Talk to me about the space casino and defend it to me, because I actually thought it was also the weakest part of the movie.
It probably is the weakest part, because it's a section of the film where the pacing is... I didn't find it to be slow in a bad way, but I found it to be toned back a bit. It is slightly less interesting, I think, but maybe that's on account of the fact that, you know, we're introduced to Rose, who we're kind of slowly, you know, warming up to. That might have something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my only issue with it is that I just think that the setting is not very imaginative. Like, it's a casino.
Yeah.
It's whatever. You know, it's kind of stale. It's not crazy. It's not quite crazy enough. It's honestly, I'm a little more interested in the cantina.
Yeah.
You know, which is just it's alien to me. And this didn't feel very alien at all. It just, you know, felt like a casino. It's like, oh, okay, what is this? I am still kind of fond of the way it concludes, though.
Yeah? In what way? In that
little character moments with the way they, connect with the children and whatnot, and, you know, how Finn kind of comes to realize the fact that, you know, through these rich assholes, you know, they're... I don't know. I guess that what am I trying to say? Well, it has to do with the part where with the weapon selling.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
No, it's yes.
I like how in coming to find these rich assholes, he learns to look a little deeper under the surface and realize that, you know, there's more to what seems to be this beautiful thing, that it's not all perfect, kind of like the rebels, which is ultimately what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that, and I like that addition. Again, what I was saying before, there's character exploration going on there. And I like it in movies when they're constantly telling you new information. And that's an important thing just to screenwriting that a lot of people tend to forget.
Yeah, the themes are interesting, and I appreciate what Rian Johnson was trying to say. I mm-hmm. think it was – I think the problem was twofold. And number one, he was trying to say too much.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, those ideas really didn't go anywhere. At least a lot of them didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I found the last shot of the movie – we'll talk about that at the end, I think. I found the last shot of the movie to be incredible. And I loved what that final scene had to say about Star Wars. I thought, like, it just all came together for me, and it was great. So from that respect, I appreciated the work that they put into building that universe. But I also just sort of found that whole sequence to linger a little too long on stuff that I didn't care about. Like, I really did not need a PETA commercial halfway through my Star Wars
That's
movie.
My only real
I just
complaint.
Did.
I was just kind of like, oh.
I just okay. didn't. Like, it wasn't necessary. Yeah. It didn't say anything about the story the sort of larger story that we're telling. And it said certain stuff about particularly Rey and Kylo's characters. There was a lot of stuff that worked, specifically the commentary on war and how this stupid battle that we have spent literally seven movies following is a greedy corporate cash grab
mm-hmm.
that we have in many of the ways that the Star Wars franchise is kind of a greedy corporate
yeah.
cash bag.
Yes.
A cash grab. It all sort of comes together. But this questioning of the nature of war, mm-hmm. this putting this into the perspective, as all great war movies do, of what are we fighting for to begin with, is great. And that's why I love Benicio's character and why I understand his role in this story. I just kind of wish that we put a little more thrust into that whole second act.
There's no momentum there.
A little more momentum, that's all.
Yeah, I can agree.
Let's just hit the gas a little bit further and let's really sink into this and let's not just linger because you want to explore a new corner of the universe.
Yeah, exactly. The PETA thing, as you were talking about, to me, was just unnecessary.
Yeah.
And like that to me is the thing that just doesn't go anywhere. It's like, okay, it's, you know, we were nice to animals and, you know, like Rose more.
Yes.
Essentially, you know.
Right. Okay. Who's your MVP of this movie?
Yoda.
Let's talk about Yoda real quick.
Yeah.
I did not even consider that Yoda could be in this movie.
Yeah, neither
did I. It didn't even cross my mind.
He's got, but this is what I said before. He's got one of my favorite scenes in the entire film. He really does. It just everything he illuminates for you about the Force and about the Jedi, the universe, and everything. It's just like, wow, I have not had this facet of Star Wars articulated to me this well ever before. It's
right.
Great.
Yeah, it's like, what do you need these stupid books for? Like, you got this incredible girl that's going to save the universe here. Everything she needs, she has already.
Yep.
You know, and they kind of doubled as sort of a – she actually stole the books.
Yeah.
So that actually doubled – sort of double entendre there, and it was clever. But it goes back to this idea and one of the larger themes of the movie – of letting the past die, of moving on, of moving into the future fearlessly and letting everything in the past.
Not necessarily die, though. It's like moving on. I'd say moving on from the past, but holding on to you know, I guess, I suppose the lessons that you learned.
Sure.
And what made you stronger in the past.
But also moving on from your demons, though.
Yes.
Moving on from what is at times very traumatic past.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And that's sort of what that scene hinted at.
Because I don't want to say it's trying to say we should kill the past, because that's kind of where Kylo's coming from. Kill it all. And this movie's like, no, just sort of let it go peacefully. Mm-hmm. Like Luke.
Yeah. Who was your MVP, though?
I don't want to be that dude to say Luke. I don't want
you loved
to,
Luke.
But I loved Luke.
You loved Luke.
I really did.
Yeah. Fucking Mark Hamill, dude.
He was really good.
Wasn't he really good?
He's come a long way from Haji Station. He really has. Good for him. My dad still makes fun of him for that.
He is both incredibly warm and lovable. At times, kind of grumpy and distant.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, incredibly horrifying.
Yep.
And he balances all three of those seemingly contradictory character beats into what is an incredibly cohesive, wonderful performance.
Yeah, it's complicated and it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense in context of the story for someone who's isolated themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reason why I buy it so much, because this is a very different Luke, but it's also a Luke that hasn't dealt with the stuff that he's been dealing with ever before. So, yeah.
Shouldn't it be a different Luke?
Shouldn't
it? It should be a different Luke, right?
At this point, yeah.
Yes.
And it should not be the exact same fucking person we left in Return of the Jedi.
Because that's what everybody said. This is not the Luke that I knew growing up.
Well, no shit.
Well, you're not the person that you were 30 years ago either, exactly. You psycho. Like, do you want him to be frozen in carbonite for the time and just emerge as I'm a whiny bitch with a green lightsaber?
I'm being totally honest with you. If that happened at Return of the Jedi and they redid it, if that idea was at all a possibility, they would have said, yes, we want that.
Right. But no, man.
Yeah.
Like, he's different. He's new. People change. People evolve. And like that. To revisit this character this long after we originally have seen him, I mean, if you are expecting anything different, you're a fool. And you're going into this movie looking for something that is fundamentally different than what I'm looking for.
Yep.
You know what I mean? If we just rehash the same old shit, if we bring back the same old character, like, as much as I loved Harrison Ford in Episode 7, like, if we're just going to replay the hits and just, like, you know, like watching the Rolling Stones do Gimme Shelter for the 1 billionth time, come on, man. You're going to criticize the movie for being stale, boring, and predictable.
Yep.
Right? You need to give me something new to justify revisiting this material.
Yep.
You know? And that's what he did here. He was tremendous in this.
I agree. Yeah. It's a movie that is giving a big... It's funny. I think this movie is very aware. Like, it's clearly in love with Star Wars, but it's also aware of the flaws of the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
And does its best to... sort of correct them, sometimes give a fuck you to them, and then other times play around with them. It's because of how different some of those ideas concerning the Force and other and the characters we thought we understood. So
yeah, I wouldn't say criticize. I wouldn't say correct. I would say criticize in the way that a true Star Wars fan can.
Yes. Right. Not an irrational Star Wars fan. Yes. There is a difference.
Sure. Absolutely.
In the way that the critical Star Wars fan said, "Hey, what is Snoke doing in this movie?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get rid of him."
Right.
Which I loved.
So good.
Oh wow! What a, I didn't think they were gonna do it until. Like, I mean, I didn't think they were gonna do it at all coming into this movie. But at the moment in which he turns the lightsaber to stab Snoke with, I'm just like, wait a second. Is he really going to do this? No fucking way.
You loved that moment.
I was just like, there's just this, the studio execs, the writers, the Rian Johnson himself, he doesn't have the balls. He can't do it. Rian Johnson.
It's not that he doesn't have the balls. It's the idea, because I think it's weird how they're making these movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like bringing in a writer's room of 15 guys to workshop the entire trilogy.
Yeah.
Like, they're letting whoever's writing each screenplay dictate the direction of the story.
They certainly did that here.
Right. So you can I think that's what's happening with Nine as well. Chris Terrio, I think, is doing the script.
Yeah. I hope, though. Because I was worried about that with Force Awakens, but to me it feels like this movie feels like a Rian Johnson film. It feels like a Star Wars film with a Rian Johnson stamp on it.
Because it does feel, to a certain extent, that Episode 7 set up a lot of stuff.
And this movie.
And this movie was just like, not really working for me, bro.
Yep.
Like, I have some notes, you know, and just kill, and let's go in a different direction with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so happy that they did that, because you know what? That's how movies used to get made. That's how sequels used to get written, and they're continuing to figure it out as they go along, and I love it. I think that's when the best creativity arises.
Now let me arrive on my own personal criticisms here.
Okay.
Let's get there.
Can I give my MVP first?
Sure.
Adam Driver's my MVP.
Okay.
I want to just say that. Can I monologue for a second?
Sure.
Monologue for a second. Sorry. And then we can get to your criticisms, because I want to keep praising this movie.
Yes, so do I.
Adam Driver's Kylo Ren is the best movie villain we've had in like 10 years.
Yep.
I think he's the best movie villain we've had since the Joker. Could be even more compelling than the Joker.
Who's your favorite movie villain of the past, of the 21st century? Mine's not the Joker.
Are we talking like...
any movie?
It's Anton Chigurh is my favorite villain.
No, okay, mine. Good. Of course we're on the same page.
We're too good with this. This is...
Adam Driver, by the way.
We need to go into some isolation chambers we recalibrate our movie taste because we're so in line with that.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Oh!
I don't want to go. Don't shoot me into outer space.
That's the best. Uh-oh!
Outer space. Outer?
He's so good in that scene. He's just like, I'm going to give you 30 seconds of the best cinematic performance I can give you. Like, I'm just going to give you movie magic for 30 seconds.
You know what? If someone were to criticize the Last Jedi and say his performances in Llewyn Davis is better, I'd be like, you know what? Sure. Say that. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Because it's great. For his limited screen time, I love him to death.
So he's incredible. Yep. He gives an incredibly layered performance. But the way that character is written, it was done competently well in Episode 7. I don't want to undersell the work that movie did. Rian Johnson takes his character to a place that I was just riveted by the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm slowly starting to realize about this trilogy is that it's kind of Kylo's story.
Yep.
We're kind of watching Kylo's story here. You know, this idea of it being the Skywalker saga, of these 9 movies are all about the Skywalker family. you're like, oh, Rey's not a Skywalker, which means this kind of has to be Kylo's story. And man, is it a riveting one.
Oh, it is more interesting than Rey's story, if I'm being totally honest.
Yes, and because I love Rey too. Do not get me wrong.
No, I like
Desi Ridley is phenomenal in this role as well.
And I like her better in this one too.
Yes, and they have such great chemistry.
Yes.
The two.
Oh,
of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I didn't expect that. I did not think that those two would have as much direct screen time together that they actually did.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, wonderful. Again, I keep going back to this, but it really helps solidify the themes of, you know, the connection with the Force and the connection with each other and establishing light and dark and eventually gray, mm-hmm. which I hope they actually do. And yeah, man, those character moments with just them sitting down and talking about what's going on with them personally is just, it's fascinating.
It just worked so yeah. well. Every time mm-hmm. they shared a scene together, it popped. And those conversations, again, like I kid when I say that they're FaceTime calls, because I really did think that they were incredible pieces of storytelling. It was a brilliant construct.
It could be silly though. There's nothing inauthentic about it though. It's
sure.
So it's oddly, because this is a monster. She literally calls him a monster,
mm-hmm.
and you know she's. I felt like she could easily turn towards the dark side because she's angry. She's Rey's angry a lot. Anyway,
mm-hmm. yeah,
maybe
true.
They'll explore that later in 9. But anyway,
yeah, daddy issues maybe.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh no. We're not going to get into that.
Oh, we will. Well, not that specifically, but we'll get to her parents. Yeah, no.
But
no,
yeah, I was just going to say that I just like for this horrible person to be having this, you know, this conversation with this just lovely little girl. Fuck.
Watch yourself.
This lovely young woman.
Yes.
It's very touching.
It is.
It's incredibly touching.
It is. And I'm always fascinated by stories that blur the line between good and evil.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is
it's kind of where Benicio's character comes in.
Yeah, it's one of the great plot devices or premises that you can invent for a movie is the idea of good guy, bad guy, kind of the same thing at the end of the day.
Yep.
And what the situation that Kylo puts himself in by the end of this movie. Where, yeah, he's a monster that murdered one of the most beloved characters in all of cinema. But you kind of see where he's coming from. You kind of get it.
Oh, his motivations do make perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Anyway.
They track. I might not be rooting for him.
No.
And he's certainly a villain in that regard.
But he's kind of pathetic. I mean, you do feel bad for him.
Yeah. I saw an article I thought put it so eloquently on theringer.com this week. Where they called Kylo the perfect millennial villain.
Yeah.
And I thought that was such a great way of putting it, and it's so now. But this idea that he's kind of whiny, he embraces his youth, but at the same time feels an obligation to honor the past. The sort of way that millennials can embrace, you know, hipsterdom and the idea that, oh, like, I play vinyl and you know, I want to pay homage to the past, but also I'm struggling to move on and I am struggling to find my identity. It's a struggle I can certainly relate to, and I thought that was a great way of putting it.
Well, that was when the scene when he kills Snoke and they kill all the royal guards and whatnot. And finally they're going to make the escape together, him and Rey. And he says, "We gotta just, you know, join me in letting the past die and destroying it." That's that. At least that idea of him being the millennial villain is just that. That's when it showed itself to me the most, I think.
Yeah,
because that is so much what, you know, a lot
it's
of millennials
so your
are,
generation.
Yeah,
and I know, like on Twitter, it's like, "Oh, it's at emo Kylo Ren or whatever."
Yeah,
but there's a lot of truth to that. Like, I do know a lot of like young men that express similar tendencies, you know what I mean? I know.
Oh.
Dudes like that.
Oh yeah, I know. And I love how they place it in the mindset of a villain, because I've always hated that mindset. I've been of the what the fuck is Robin Williams' character's name in fucking that movie with George Roy Hill. It's the director. It's got Glenn Close in it, and he gets shot at the end of the movie and flies away.
What
the fuck is this movie?
I've never seen this movie.
The World According to Garp.
I've never seen Garp.
He's got a great line when he's talking about...
Thanks for spoiling the end of
Garp.
Okay.
But he has a great line where he's like, no, his wife was criticizing him, like, you should live more in the present. He's like, no, I do live in the present. I just think about the past.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Uh-huh.
Because you sort of need the past to, like I said before, you need the past to sort of understand the present.
Right. But it is a conflicting thing sometimes. It's a difficult pill to swallow at times.
But not be afraid of it. That's the thing. And I think Kylo is clearly afraid of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely so. And is struggling because, look, his mentor betrayed him in his eyes.
Yes.
You know, whether or not we're never going to know exactly what happened between the two of them. They give you three versions of the story and you're sort of left
maybe
to make up your mind for whatever happened. You know, you believe whatever side you want to believe. That's and great. I love that they keep that ambiguous.
Again, not necessarily all the clear answers. It's still complicated. Sure. It's ambiguous. It's great.
Another thing for you to theorize on your Reddit feeds, everybody, like do it whatever you want. But, no, yeah, I get it. Like, if your uncle thought about even for a half a second killing you in your sleep, like, yeah, I'm going to kind of hate the past.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a real problem with, you know, honoring the generation that came before me. I'm going to want to run away from it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it makes total sense. And Luke is put in a similar predicament. He's not the hero that we remember him as. He's a complicated guy, and these are all complicated people. This idea of Star Wars being this knight in shining armor, good guy versus bad guy space opera worked in the 70s. And now listen, we're on episode 8. It's time to mature a little bit. It's mm-hmm. time to reconsider things and take a new approach to the morality of this story. You know?
And they do. And I'm sorry to people who disagree with me, but I haven't heard a compelling argument otherwise.
I haven't either. Give me your gripes.
Oh, I gave a little bit. Oh, the thing about Snoke and to me it's essentially in a lot of ways sort of a fuck you to. I mean, it is to emphasize the idea of the fuck you to the past. But when you look at it, when you're first coming into it, the way it feels is just to subvert your expectations about what you were thinking in The Force Awakens and what you were theorizing.
Mm-hmm.
It feels great now. I don't know how well it's going to age when I watch it later.
Why?
There's a part of me that thinks if I watch that later, it'll just seem a little, I don't know.
Shocking for the sake of
yeah,
shock.
It might not necessarily feel as organic as earned as some other deaths like in the previous Star Wars films. You know what I mean?
I guess I understand what you're saying, but I disagree because I think like
I don't have a problem with it now. Again, yeah. Like I said, time will tell. It's just I was thinking about it. It's like
I mean, isn't Snoke's presence in this story more to say something about Kylo? I mean, isn't like the fact that he killed Snoke?
Yes.
You know, it serves his character.
Yes. You know? Well, again, and it'll also be confirmed as to what direction they choose to take in episode 9, which and it better become Kylo's story is the thing.
Sure.
Entirely his story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But do you think they need to explain some of the past with Snoke?
No.
Okay.
Of course not. Is it possible that he's just a crazy loon that started a cult?
Yeah. Well, relative to the original trilogy, that's what the Emperor was.
Right. I know. We weren't led to believe that the Emperor had, like, ancient, you know, a DNA we never explored Palpatine's roots. Why do we have to explore Snoke's?
Nope.
I mean, I don't know. It's nice. I guess it's cool if you want to learn more about characters, but I thought, as most people did, that he was the weakest part of episode 7 by a mile.
I rewatched episode 7 in preparation for episode 8.
I did
8.
Too.
Yeah, there are more notable problems than you think.
Oh, certainly.
Starkiller Base is, watching it now, I'm just like, this is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Starkiller Base is not just a poor decision. I mean, it's not just like an okay, whatever decision. I mean, I think it's just a bad choice.
They yada yada over mass genocide way too
quickly.
With way too much ease. They're just like, yeah, we're going to exterminate millions of people literally in 5 seconds.
For the sake of calling back to the original.
Yes.
And it felt far more apparent that watching it, a year later, because mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in like a year.
And yes, so. The way that the movie deals with death is a little weird. And whereas in this movie, it's a weird thing. And this was an observation that's not necessarily a complaint, but just an interesting observation. I think the nature of Star Wars now, or at least what it's become, it requires there to be a lot of red shirts in the story all of a sudden. and there's just a lot of guys that just show up just to be killed.
Like, for there was this one dude that was like, it's been a pleasure serving with you, or whatever, yeah, that just got blown up. And then there was Rose's sister that
now,
I guess.
I love that death sequence.
I love that death sequence. Yes, I liked it too.
Huge distinction between this and Rogue One is that the opening of Rogue One is of Jyn Erso's mom dying, and I didn't feel a fucking thing.
Sure.
And in this, I know this character for all of, what is it, like 10 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really felt for her when she finally went.
Yeah.
It was weird. I didn't expect that.
Yeah. But I and again, this is not a criticism, but I think this movie had to in some way convey what a massive loss the Resistance was experiencing.
Yeah.
And it becomes very clear at the end of the movie when there's like 10 people left and that's it. But
persevering through failure.
Sure, sure. But I mean, so this idea that, yeah, we get guys that are on screen for 30 seconds and then we just kill them off, it does make me feel a little weird, but this movie does it way better than it's been done in the past.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they also, I just felt bad for it. There is something really sad and pathetic about seeing like just a rebel ship just kind of just float off into the little bubble that you know it's just going to get destroyed to.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know what it is, but they just the choices they make really, really hit home in this, you know?
Yeah, I loved...
It's very clever.
I loved pretty close to every choice they made in this movie.
Yes.
And that is, and it's not to say that it's how I would have done it,
okay,
but it is to say, like, I loved it once they did it.
Yes.
You know? That's mm-hmm. that's the important distinction here. Just because you wouldn't have done it that way doesn't mean that wasn't yes. the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. There is one other... criticism about this movie that I've heard from a few people is that they've said that this movie feels like the end of the series in a lot of ways. Like it's a one big climax.
I could see that.
And I can see that too.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I will admit, I'm not as excited for episode 9 as I was for this.
I agree.
That's not to say I'm not excited for episode 9.
Yes. This movie left me in a place where I was actually pretty satisfied.
Like, this is how I felt. I was like, they could stop it right here,
uh-huh,
and I'd be fine with that.
And I'd be okay, too. I was not – yes, my first reaction when I walked out of the theater was, wow, that was awesome. It was not, man, I can't wait for the next movie.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a good thing because aren't movies supposed to leave you, like, being yeah. happy you just sat through it?
Yes, because essentially it's the same reaction you would have had at the end of A New Hope.
Right. Sure, 100%.
That's why I'm not critical of it too much.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see where it goes, but like, man, this is not television. This is cinema. So yep. let's enjoy what we have for now, and we'll let them figure it out as they go along next time.
Yeah, singular little stories, little episodes. Haha.
Yeah. No, there's interesting material that can still be made.
Oh, yeah, no, I completely agree.
There's no question about it.
I got one more question, Nico.
Go ahead.
What do you think about the length of this movie?
Totally fine. Totally fine with it.
You want my hot take?
I could have done another hour.
This is interesting coming from me, and I've been thinking about this long and hard. This movie is the movie this year that I felt the length of it the most.
That is really fucking weird, dude. Because is the year of the long ass fucking slow burn movie.
Yes.
That makes no sense to me at all. This one moved. This felt like 45 minutes to me. I'm really? Serious. Oh.
This movie felt like the entire 2 hours and 30 minutes to me.
I saw this at 11:30.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. I had no sleep the night before, and I worked a full day. Mm-hmm. And I was at the theater till 3 o'clock, and I was juiced by the end of it.
I was juiced. I wasn't psyched.
I wasn't bored. I didn't yawn. And I honestly could have sat there for another hour easily.
I felt that way, too. Easily. This movie felt longer than Blade Runner to
That's
me.
A weird thing to say.
But then again, so did Three Billboards. And I was trying to think about it. I was trying to understand why that was because I had the same sort of reaction. I was like, this movie is, you know, 15 minutes shorter than Blade Runner, so why does it feel longer to me?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, the same exact thing happened with Three Billboards. So I was like, okay, what was it that made me think that? And I realized it's the structure of the movie.
Yes.
This movie has like 5 climaxes.
It's true.
And I kept anticipating an ending. And I realized like, oh, as soon as that happened in Three Billboards, the movie made me think like, wait, when is this actually going to start to wrap up? Right. And when that was on my mind, the length of the movie started to become clearer and clearer to me. That never happened in Blade Runner because there is only one climax and it has a more consistent flow in those regards. It is a better structured film, but that's not to say that even when this film decides to continue again, that it wasn't satisfying. And that's the distinction I need to make. Even though, yeah, by structuring it that way, you do feel the length of it, at least what it leads into is kind of incredible.
Yeah, we're trained to watch movies a certain way. We're trained to look for similar plot touchstones and patterns. And yeah, I mean, there's a certain feel to a movie. And Rian Johnson, for as much as I respect him as a director, has never been a great act one, act two, act three guy. You know, he's never been one to work within the form that well.
But again, it's when you do a movie more about the characters, it can be a little loose. You know, movies that are character-based, the plots are, they're kind of, I mean, in this it matters, but honestly, to me, less so than other Star Wars films.
Yeah.
Especially with how many plans fail in this, you know?
Sure. No, 100%.
No. I mean, the perfect example of a movie that literally has no plot because it's only focused on the characters is the Before trilogy, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing in that movie plot-wise. It's just wherever the characters take us.
Right.
And that's, to an extent, how I felt here.
Yeah, I don't want to say, like...
I'm not
saying The Last Jedi is waiting for Godot. You know what I mean? Like, it's not My Dinner with Andre.
No.
It's got a story. But
the rules of how you handle a traditional narrative are twisted a bit.
Yeah, no, totally. And...
Some
of it is ambition, some of it is shortcomings. I mean, it is. Some of it is the shortcomings of the filmmaker, but people are flawed, man.
Anyone listening to this, I'm not calling Last Jedi like Pulp Fiction or something. That's not
just, right. No.
Don't take it to that extreme, for Christ's sake.
Sure, 100%. Yeah. Cyber Ray's parents.
What about them?
Just, I don't know. Talk to me about them.
They're nobody, Nico.
They are nobody.
They're nothing.
Right.
They're a junk.
Are we sure they're nobody, by the way?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
Right.
I loved that. The fact that it was coming from him made me say, but I don't know. Right. It's fucking Kylo Ren.
Yes.
But I would still love it to death if they were fucking nobody.
So that I went great. Back in preparation for this podcast here, and I listened to the recap that we did of episode 7 2 years ago.
I predicted that Luke would be spearfishing.
Did you really?
Yes, I did. I was so happy when I saw it. I was like, yes! I like yelled it out in the theater. He's fucking spearfishing.
So I went back. That was the first time we've ever met, by the way. It was recorded on audio. Our lives changed ever since. We set down a new path and no turning back now.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And I said on that podcast, like, why can't Rey just be nobody?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is it etched in stone somewhere that this has to be a movie 100% about the Skywalkers?
And you think I remember saying, like, I think it's going to be someone, but I would love it if I was proven wrong.
Sure.
I think that's what I said.
The main criticism of stupid people on the internet, I'm sorry that I'm calling you guys out like this because I'm sure many of you are listening, but it's true. You're just being stupid here, guys. The main criticism is, why did they make us wait this long if the answer didn't matter? And all I can say to that is the answer did matter. The answer matters a whole fuck ton. The fact that her parents are nobody means something to this story. It means something about her. It is saying something. Just because it doesn't give you the fan service that you desire, just because it doesn't help with the Comic-Con conversations that you'll be having this July, just because it doesn't service all of your fan theories on your YouTube video breakdowns, doesn't mean the answer doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, the answer means a shit ton for this story. And I loved what it said about this. I heard this explained on the internet in the most eloquent of ways, and I'm just going to totally rip it off and pass along this sentence as my own. This story is not about Rey being born special. It's that she was born and became special. And that is exactly what this movie is about. The idea that we all have the Force and no one has the Force. Yeah. We're all heroes and at the same time, no one's a hero, right? This idea that Rey can literally be anybody, that you are not destined at birth for great things, that you are not, and in many ways, in the instance of Kylo Ren, this was someone who was destined for great things that fell short of those expectations after his birth, right? And the fact that Rey was destined for nothing and ultimately became something, that is one of the most poignant messages you can deliver in a movie. It is one of the foundations of American cinema. It's one of the foundations of American culture. Mm-hmm. Is the idea that you are not born something, you become something. Your life is your own. The decisions that you make bring you to these places. So the idea that Rey is not related to Obi-Wan, not related to Luke, not related to Qui-Gon Jinn, it's a beautiful thing. This is a beautiful thing about this universe. It says something great about Star Wars, and it made me so excited to hear that finally.
Yep. I was literally going to say what you just said. It's brilliant. It's just the idea that these characters don't have to be born from some special kin or whatever. They can be anybody. They can be just as good as Obi-Wan or Anakin or whoever and be absolutely nobody. It's your actions that make you who you are. It's your actions that make you special. It's part of the reason why, again, I'm sorry to reference Blade Runner again, but that's part of the reason why I love the K character in Blade Runner so much, is that the movie sets up that he is this amazing special being born from something unique, and then it turns out he's nothing. Mm-hmm. And then the movie tests him at the very end. You can go back to what you were before or make something of yourself,
right,
and go save Harrison Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his, again, it's his actions that ends up making him this ultimately special.
So what I loved
being
about Blade Runner, it's what I adored about Blade Runner.
I'm sorry, but Blade Runner's. I'm
we
sorry.
Talked about this on the Blade Runner podcast.
It's brilliant.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No,
but
that was
fucking brilliant.
I could not agree with you more.
And it is ever present here as well.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Yeah. It's so frustrating. It really is frustrating. I hope these guys are trolling. Like, I hope they're trolling.
I genuinely don't get it. Red Letter Media didn't like it.
Oh,
I was so, and they loved upsetting Blade Runner 2049. So I was like, "What the fuck is going on?"
That's upsetting. That's so damn upsetting.
Like I don't get. I'm sorry, but you know, maybe that's okay. Maybe we can be in this gray area.
No, disagreement's great. Yes. I don't. I don't want to be the guy that's, you know, running this authoritarian film culture of we all must agree on the quality of every movie. Like, I'm okay with disagreement on stuff. It's great. But just, you gotta give me a compelling reason.
I guess the way I always say is, like, I understand why in the sense that you've told me I understand why in the sense that you have reasons and these reasons bother you for whatever reason. Here's my distinction. I just don't understand how these reasons have come to bother you.
Yeah, it's just, but
I don't get it.
What it is that these reasons don't explain why the movie didn't work for you.
No.
On a cinematic level. Like, that's the conversation that I want to have, right? And that's the conversation we have about Dunkirk, for example. Like, I understand your reasons for not liking the movie and why ultimately that experience would fall short for you. The idea that, like, being a space wizard can fundamentally ruin the experience of watching this movie just doesn't make sense to me. You haven't explained it in any coherent way.
From a cinematic, like you said, a cinematic standpoint, as just a movie,
mm-hmm,
and for everything that it is, it's just, I mean, it does everything that you want.
Yeah, it does.
So I'm just...
You get to see Luke Skywalker with a lightsaber again.
Here's the brilliant thing about this movie. There is not one lightsaber fight scene where lightsabers touch and clash.
Right.
Never happens once.
Yeah. 100%. Yes.
That's how fucking that's how great this movie is. The fact that it has the courage to be like, yeah, we're not going to play into that trope again. We'll give you lightsabers, but you're not getting a traditional fight. Sorry, guys. I guess
there's no other lightsabers when Rey and Kylo are destroying or tearing up
the only time lightsabers ever clash. It is for one of the more powerful moments in the entire film, and that's when when he thinks Luke's going to kill him. That's the only point when a lightsaber clashes in the entire film.
Yeah, that's very
true. And thematically, that's brilliant.
Sure, 100%.
Makes perfect sense to me. So, yeah. There you go.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah, I never thought about that.
I love it.
Man, I loved that scene with Luke.
I loved it.
I feel like we haven't talked about Luke enough, but I mean, let's just briefly touch upon his passing, because that's what it is. It's his passing as a character.
Yeah. I said before, like, Carrie Fisher flying through space is like one of the most poignant moments of the year. I guess Luke in front of the double sun again is
at his age, and then finally just kind of.
I mean, evaporating. That's like number two on the list.
I was a little more moved by that, but yeah, because I've always connected to that.
Whatever. There's like,
it does, but you know,
there's like five of those shots in this movie, yeah, though. God damn it! I got emotional in the theater.
I got emotional at the parts that I didn't think I would. Like, I didn't think that the scene where Laura Dern flies the spaceship into the cruiser would be so fucking
incredible.
Like, just beautiful and scary and sad.
Ugh. Yo, Laura Dern gets to come off the bench in this movie.
Yeah.
Give you a quick five. How great is that? Laura Dern just putting up buckets.
She was in Jurassic Park and Star Wars.
How great's Laura Dern?
And Blue Velvet.
And Twin Peaks.
And Twin Peaks.
And Inland Empire. Don't forget Inland Empire.
I haven't seen Inland. Well, I've seen some of Inland Empire.
I've seen about 2 minutes, and that's man, I couldn't imagine sitting through that. Laura Dern's great in this. Purple-haired Laura Dern. Wonderful. That moment, that was one of the moments in the theater, because they dropped the sound out a few times in this movie.
Yep.
Where everybody's like, whoa. And everybody starts laughing because the, you know, drunk guy in the corner is the most loud about it.
Fucking assholes. Fucking assholes. This is why the theaters aren't doing as well, you fucking pricks.
Man, what a great shot that was, too. It's just constantly. But at the end, yeah. We get to see Luke again in front of the double suns, and the music is playing, and oh, incredible.
Perfect. Oh yeah, and I also, we're getting like Easter eggy here, but the use of the, I don't know what the actual name of the music is. I just call it the trench music.
Mm-hmm.
When Chewie's going into the canyons, the
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, that's the first time they've played it, I think, since A New Hope.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
And I was just like, I'm such a fanboy for that shit, but it did give me chills. I not to suck this film's dick, but you know.
Sure.
I did love
too
that.
Too late.
I love that little
I need
moment.
To go back and see moment. This a second time, because I must have missed a lot of this stuff. My friend leaving the theater had an idea for how he would have ended this movie.
I heard about this.
Oh, you did hear about this. Did Zach tell you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll just say it on the air here. And just hearing this idea made my spine tingle. Like,
they should have done this.
Oh,
they should have done this.
What an amazing idea. No, seriously, like, Disney should hire Alex Lawson for this. At the end, when Rey and Leia are having the conversation about Luke is gone now, I can feel it, or whatever, mm-hmm. What he would have done in that moment, without changing the plot, without having to do any reshoots, he would have just faded Leia out at the exact same time.
Yep.
And for them to go away together, and for it to sort of be a symbolic ending of Leia's story, they wouldn't have to make a big deal about it, and they could address the issue in a succinct way, and it literally, everybody would have been bawling their eyes out in the theater.
Yep.
How incredible is that idea?
It's wonderful. Oh my God.
Isn't it great? I'm serious. When he said that to me, I started choking up. I'm like, Jesus Christ. What are you doing to me right now? Just fade her out. And that way, I mean, I did like how they handled her thing. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Rian Johnson said specifically that he did not want the performance to change because she gave a kick-ass performance. And why mess with it?
That's good.
You know? And
he's a respectful dude for that.
Yeah, totally. And my God, she was great in this movie too. She really was. Yeah. She stepped up her game from the last
really
one.
She really did.
Because there was a lot of chatter after episode 7 of like, oh, they had to cut some Carrie Fisher scenes. She wasn't quite up to snuff in the acting department.
She was very good here.
I liked her a lot.
Very good.
I really did. And I'm not just saying that.
Yeah.
But it's that thing where every scene she's in just has this added weight to it, because you know that she's no longer with us. And everything just feels that much more emotionally dense. It just feels that little bit of melancholy just sprinkled on top of what is an incredibly charming performance is awesome. Just awesome, 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 awesome.
It's a good movie.
It is a good movie. Any other little thoughts about other characters? We said Laura Dern was great.
Poe was great, but, you know,
Poe's great.
I love his development to saying, you know, I'm going to be a trigger happy asshole to, you know what, maybe that's not the best route to take, and that I buy it entirely in this. They didn't shoehorn anything. It felt believable. Yep.
Yeah, Oscar Isaac is...
Like you said before, a while ago, he's a charisma machine. And he really is.
Charisma machine. Yeah. It just has it in spades. It's like you are drawn to him whenever he's on screen.
Yep.
And he's great. And I love how they sort of... they made him the apprentice of Leia, essentially. You know, like, he was sort of her Padawan in that way.
Yep.
And we got to see that little arc. And, man, I would have loved to see that arc come to its culmination in the last movie. And we don't get to see it, and it's awful.
Awful.
But just the initial seed of it is great. It's just great. And what he learns from her is tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Very touching. Very sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Man, I love this movie.
Yep.
I just love this movie. I think it's one of my favorite Star Wars movies. I think it's number three. I really do. It's number three.
Mm.
Uh-oh. Don't say it.
Assuming the things that I said before age well.
Oh, no.
It's really good.
Number two?
It's really fucking good.
Number two? You're putting it in the rarefied air?
It's really fucking good.
Wow.
It's really fucking good.
Wow. Have you seen it a second time yet?
Oh, yeah. I told you.
Oh, that's right. You went the other day.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really fucking good. Again, it just came out, so we'll give it time, but it's right. It's pretty close to right there. I have, you know, not to be a cheater or anything, but I have Force Awakens tied with Return of the Jedi at this point.
There's no ties.
Can I not?
You don't get to tie shit.
I can break the rules.
Make a call.
Fuck you.
Make a
That was my call. Fuck you. Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens are equivalent. There you go.
Okay. I think Force Awakens is better than Jedi.
On review, like I said, I love The Force Awakens, but yeah.
I just think it's better, I don't know, man. Force Awakens is at least an adult movie.
There is nothing, not even the death of Han Solo. There's nothing in that movie that it is more emotionally impactful than the scene when Luke is beating the shit out of Darth Vader. I could not disagree
with you more.
I don't.
Which is my major criticism with Return of the Jedi, is I find that scene
to
be deeply flawed. It's not a bad scene, but it is a deeply flawed scene.
How so?
Leave the mask on.
Why?
Because Darth Vader is this symbolic representation of evil.
But he's not Darth Vader at that point.
No. Well,
he's Anakin again.
Oh man, we're nitpicking. I disagree with you. I think what made Darth Vader special, and what made him particularly poignant in the 70s, and why he wouldn't work now, is that he is a horrific force of destruction and terror that you cannot stop even if you tried. And when he becomes and this is going to be the hottest of all hot takes I can possibly give you. The thing that in my opinion destroyed Star Wars for 20 years is making Darth Vader Anakin Skywalker.
Okay.
That whole premise that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father, although it led to one of the great twists in cinematic history, and although it led to interesting character revelations, ultimately gave us 20 years of a fundamentally uninteresting story.
Okay.
The more I learn about Darth Vader, the less I care about him.
I like Darth Vader a lot, and I like his character. And I think that that metaphor you have for him is more... It's more applicable to the Emperor, at least.
Sure.
And I feel like the whole point of the saga in the first one is getting Darth Vader to ultimately turn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what it all builds to.
Yeah, sure.
It's reaffirming the fact that he kind of is the chosen one at the end of the day, that he does destroy the Sith.
Yes. Right? No, I understand. And it's it
But far be it from me to criticize the fundamental character arc of the first six Star Wars movies.
And he's a tragic character. Yes. Is the other thing. And I like when they take off the mask, because you just see the wake of his destruction just by looking at his fucking face.
It shows you too much.
I don't think, no.
It shows you too much. I
disagree.
The ambiguity of that would have been a lot more powerful. I just think, like, when you see Darth Vader in the flesh...
Thematically, does that make sense with what's happened in that story at that point?
I suppose, if you want to make him a human, I guess. I don't know. I saw that and thought, ew, that's a gross dude with a harmonica in front of his face. You know what I mean? I don't know. I guess when I originally saw that moment, for me, just all of the wonder and mysticism of Star Wars instantly went away.
Really?
It did. Okay. It certainly did.
Because my reaction was like, wow, this is just a destroyed, broken old man at the end of the day.
Sure.
And it's really sad.
It is really sad.
And the fact that I'm feeling sad for this guy who fundamentally was critical in the destruction of a planet is saying something.
No. I don't necessarily think that scene gets there.
Yeah, which I love it. It's one of my favorite moments in the entire original trilogy.
Which is why Return of the Jedi is, man, love that movie. Don't get me wrong, but it's just not in the top four at this point.
I do, after rewatching the Force Awakens.
And also, it's like just the Muppet movie for 2 hours.
I don't hate the Ewoks. I just don't.
No, neither do I.
But no, I'll say, Like I said, rewatching The Force Awakens, I still love it, but it is how derivative it is almost to the film's detriment at this point. After rewatching, I was like, wow.
I was struck with the exact same thought. I really was. Yes. Yeah.
And it did bring it to like Return of the Jedi level. That's why right now I have it kind of even, because I can't really decide, because I love that first half, and even though the Ewoks can be a little annoying, it still pays off in the end for me. So. Mm-hmm.
How about Rogue One though?
I have Rogue One. You want to? Okay, here's my ranking.
Let's do it. Everybody on Twitter's doing it.
Yeah.
Let's just hop in.
Cool and fucking original. Okay, I know. You want me to go best to worst or worst to best?
Go worst to best.
Okay. Attack of the Clones.
Correct.
Bullshit. I mean, if I want to count the Clone Wars movie. We're not. Okay.
Are we going to count Battle of Endor too?
No.
Okay, good.
Okay, so Attack of the Clones, Phantom Menace, Rogue One.
Ooh, yeah, correct.
Revenge of the Sith.
Correct.
And this is where it gets tricky, because this is where I'm with Return of the Jedi, Force Awakens.
Fair.
I need to like sit down and watch them right next to each other, and then make a decision at that point. Mm-hmm. And then
I don't think those creatures in Jabba's palace are going to hold up for you.
CGI creatures, yes, but that's the special edition.
I don't know, man. You may grow to hate Salacious Crumb the more you spend time with him.
I've grown up with Salacious Crumb.
Okay.
He's fine.
I don't know. It's the Muppet movie. It's Sesame Street.
Yes.
It's Sesame Street, that movie.
But at least they're fucking real. They're real things in front of me, you know?
Okay.
And then we get the...
By the way, Yoda was a puppet. We should say that.
Yes.
How great that Yoda was a puppet.
A good puppet, too.
A great puppet!
And it was the weird Yoda, not the self-serious bullshit that we get in the trilogies, where it's like, where's the fun in this character of this wise old curmudgeon, hilarious
but
master?
Adam, the Star Wars movies aren't supposed to have comedy. So dumb.
Fucking bullshit.
So dumb.
Anyway. And this is where we get to the trickiest decisions. Because for me, this is really hard.
New Hope is a better movie than
this. For safety's sake.
It is. No, it is, Adam.
It's a greater movie.
Certainly. Certainly a greater movie.
Technically, is it better?
Yeah. Yeah. If
it's not as...
Last Jedi could not come out in 1977.
Why not?
It just couldn't. It just... What that movie did in the context of the time, it's an incredible achievement. It's just incredible. And Lucas, the way that he frames a shot in that movie and what he does with the camera cannot be understated. It is an incredible work of filmmaking.
Yes, I agree.
It is a marvel of filmmaking, you know? It's some of the best we've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm not going to go to say that Last Jedi is the best we've ever seen, but that is relative to the time, too.
Yeah.
But
you have to go relative to the time.
Yes.
Of course you do. If Rogue One came out in 1977, forget about it. Yes. Like, it's the greatest movie we've ever seen.
But Last Jedi is a more interesting film.
Yeah.
And generally, it may even be a more compelling film.
And it always comes back to, as well, this idea that you cannot deconstruct anything until you construct it.
Yes.
Right? Episode 8 cannot play around with these interesting ideas
if
Episode 4 doesn't put these ideas in our heads.
Which is why right now I feel I'm safer saying Last Jedi than probably A New Hope. That makes sense. Okay. And then Empire.
Correct.
Empire is just, and I'm sorry, but Empire is just
a masterpiece.
Perfect.
It's a masterpiece.
It's perfect. And I mean, I'm sorry, Jodorowsky. It's a good movie.
Jodorowsky.
I'm sorry.
What does he know?
Well, a little too much.
What has he ever done for any of us?
So Last Jedi. Give it time. It could surpass. I mean, I also don't want to say that. I don't want to say that it's better than A New Hope. So I'm comfortable right now putting it at 3.
There you go. 2 thumbs up from Adam Hall. Last Jedi is good. Hot take. Man, everybody on the internet, settle down.
Yeah.
Seriously, settle down.
Yes.
And, like, let the critics be the whiny bitches, all right?
Yeah.
Like, enjoy your movies. Have fun.
Yeah, it's a movie.
Enjoy your life.
As I've said, like, 1,000 times on this fucking podcast, it's a movie, you idiots.
I know. What I got here was I got to see a franchise that I have grown up with that, like, raised me for a good 3 years of my life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Luke Skywalker and Leia were probably in my life more than my actual parents were from ages, like, 8 to 13.
I remember I didn't like Star Wars when I was really, really young.
Okay.
It took me a little – because I remember, like, seeing characters die and it freaked me out.
Okay.
And then I saw Alien and everything changed.
That was your gateway drug to Alien the Star Wars universe?
Alien is not only the most important film in my life. It's one of the most important films to fundamentally make me who I am.
Yes. Well, we know that for a fact. Yes.
Has nothing to do with the suggestive imagery in that movie.
Of course not.
Dicks.
No.
Has nothing to do with that.
But what I got here is I got to watch that franchise become new again. And, like, I got such a rush from seeing that, and I was surprised and shocked and intrigued and
it's too new, Nico.
Provoked.
It's too new.
How cool. How cool that we get to have this movie in our lives. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. I loved it. It is too new, though. It sucks. Too many changes.
I laugh too much. Oh,
fuck you.
What a weird complaint. Okay.
I've said all I need to say.
Man, here we are.
Oh, yeah, samurai influence. That was cool. I could see some with some of the choreography with the fight sequence, especially at the end with Kylo and Luke. I was like, ha-ha, Last Samurai or Rashomon to a certain extent.
Tremendous.
I'm a film nerd. Fuck you.
We're coming to the end of the year, Adam Hall.
Yeah.
Christmas is right around the corner. We wish every listener of this podcast a very happy holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you get down to this time of the year, enjoy it. That was a weird way of saying happy holidays.
Get down to it and enjoy it.
Yeah. But we are coming to the end of the calendar year, and because we're a bunch of cliche movie nerds on the internet, we're going to do a cliche movie nerd thing at some point in the coming weeks, and that is our top 10 lists, counting down our 10 favorite films of 2017. There's a lot that we have to catch up on over the next week and a half. We'll hopefully get this list out at some point. Maybe we'll do one more podcast before then. Who the hell knows? But we are, I think, going to have a very spirited conversation as we run down our favorite movies, and I'm very much looking forward to that. So that will most likely be the next show that you listen to. Subscribe to Movie Hopping on iTunes, on Stitcher, on whatever podcast provider suits your needs. Go to TooManyThoughtsMedia.com or TMT.media to keep up with the entire TMT empire. Listen to Why Is This a Thing? Listen to the Nico Show.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, they'll bring you great joy in your life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. More so than Star Wars.
Yeah. Don't come at me and be like, yo, I laugh too much during your podcast. Don't give me that shit.
We need to make some serious changes here, Nico.
That was not the "why is this a thing I know."
We need to make our podcast boring and forgettable.
I'm sorry if my podcast isn't predictable enough for you. I'm sorry. Yeah. Why didn't we meet your theories?
The only thing I have to say for your theories, ladies and gentlemen, is Scarlett Johansson.
Don't say those things.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Please do. Please do. I thought Adam's parents were different.
They're nobody.
Yeah, they're nobody. Sold off for scraps.
That's why I'm so crazy. Yeah,
that's it. Sure, that's what it is. Yeah. All right, cool. Where are you on Twitter? You're a good follow, by the way, on the old Twitter.
Yeah. Why? What did I say that was good news?
I don't know. You're not too bad.
Yeah. Did I gave my Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a decent one.
Yeah, it's great. You love giving your cinematic takes. So what's your Twitter?
At some Adam Hall.
I'm at Funny Nico Tweets. I mostly just complain about fantasy football, and that's it.
Football. Football.
Let's not talk about it. Let's not talk about it. I've cast it out of my life. I've gone into NFL hibernation.
You did not want to be at my house.
No, no, you didn't want to be at mine either. Don't worry about it. We'll be back next time to wrap up the new year. Until then, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a happy movie hopping.